Roan Mountain Radio, episode 69. Welcome to Roan Mountain Radio. I'm Ken Turner. This is an exceptional podcast today. This is one of my most enjoyable conversations. I'm going to dispense with a whole lot of introduction just to say that the commissioned music commissioned by Judy Murray of the Roan Mountain Suite to be a world premiere performance October the 15th at the Bristol Paramount Theater, that's Bristol, Tennessee, performed by the Kruger Brothers and the Contras Quartet. This is Jens Kruger, the composer. I was able to get a few minutes of his time, and he was very generous with his time. I'm just really impressed, and I hope you will be too. So no more introduction. Here's a conversation with composer Jens Kruger.
Tell me a little your impressions. Now, I think everybody that goes to Roan Mountain wishes they could capture a feeling. There's just an inner ache. I want to take this feeling home with me. And you're doing that with music.
Well, yeah, I do that. Let me just tell you a little bit about this. You know, I mean, everybody comes to me, you know, tells me, yeah, it's the most beautiful region and so forth. And it's mountains and you're high up. And then I always tell them, yes, I'm from Switzerland. I know how that feels.
Yeah.
So there's a sense of in the house I used to live, you know, I see snow-capped mountains just a few miles from my home all year round. And so there's waterfalls and rivers, you know, and the beauty in Switzerland and the Alps is really stunning. So so it's not just the beauty that is so spectacular about Roan Mountain. It represents the Appalachian Mountains. You see, when you are in the Appalachian Mountains, you can't really see them because you're in them. And then you have a few overlooks, you know, where you can actually, you know, on the Blue Ridge Parkway especially, you know, where you can overlook the mountains and you can see things. But when you are on Roan, you are actually on a mountain, and it really you see Mount Mitchell, you see all these, these peaks, and you see all the, you know, it seems endless. It seems like an ocean of these hills, and you realize this is all inhabitable. This is a big part of America, and there's a significant history, of course, that you know surrounds Roan Mountain. You know, being in the old days, not an artificial bald like it is today. You know, the bald is actually maintained with mowers and
right.
and you know whatnot, just to keep them you know tree free like they used to be when lots of animals would graze there. And from the Ice Age on, you know, vegetation came up, and then animals got used to just grazing there and keep it all clear for you know thousands and thousands of years, you know.
Right.
And so I think there's a way, you know, that people surrounded this area, you know, because there's food source. So the Native Americans, you know, looked at it as a sacred ground because animals would gather there. They could hunt and live there. And then when the Europeans came, you know, and started settling around there, you know, they found it to be extremely interesting place, because there is no other place like that with these balls and how far you can see, and also the animals, the hunting again, the same procedure. And then they also discovered iron ore, and they have a mill down there where they actually get the iron ore out of the ground. And then, of course, the history of the Overmountain men, you know, that went over the Roan Mountain to fight the Battle of King's Mountain, which was the first victory, you know, for the rebels against the Redcoats.
Right.
And so that was the first, you know, battle that really was defying, you know, all the rest of the Revolutionary War. And so in the entire region, you have all these families, you know, that all their ancestors, somebody of their ancestors was a part of the Overmountain men, you know. So I think all that together makes this place just really special. Also, if you, you know, look, let's say, you know, when I was in Europe and I still lived in Europe and I looked up books, you know, or there was magazines, National Geographic, and they would have a report on the Appalachian Mountains. I mean, in the first few pictures, you will see a picture of Roan.
That's right.
You know, you will see, oh, that's Roan Mountain. Once you know it, you realize, yes, it is actually that's the sign for the Appalachian Mountains. You know, that's how we, that's how the world imagines the Appalachian Mountains. You know, that's part of, because it displays it so well. You can see the hills, you can see the grassy balls. It is, there's rivers, there's everything. It's just sort of the whole package in one thing. And for me, when I got asked to write about it, you know, I was very, always hesitant, you know, when I'm asked to write about something, because I just don't know enough about it. And then so I said, okay, let me look at the place. So I went up there and, we bought books and I read up on the stories and all the families. And, of course, the Cloudland Hotel that was standing up there, and people would go there trying to cure their hay fever. And also, you know, having the right to drink whiskey on one side of the hall and not on the other because it would cross the border. And they had a sheriff actually sitting there making sure that this law was reinforced. And all these stories, you know, how they would get up with the wagons and the mules. They would stay there all summer. And then also the ravens, you know, that are up at Roan Mountain, you know, that,
oh, yes.
You know, the raven as the messenger of all cultures, from the Greek to the Cherokee, it doesn't matter. They all have their story of the raven, that it used to be white. It would bring bad news, and then they would throw it either in the fire or hit it by lightning or something, and then it turned black for eternity. So it really doesn't matter if you are in Christianity, if you are, with the Greek mythology, if you are with the Nakotas or the Dakotas or the Cherokees, you know, it doesn't matter. They all have their raven story. The raven seems to be the universal messenger. So what I did is I got so many pictures in, you know, that I could actually write music about. And when I start composing, I usually fill a book, you know, with all my impressions, so I'm getting a little bit more clear about all that. And so I make sketches, and I write down all the things that I think that are significant, all my impressions. And then I create these pictures I can stay with. I think they are very important. Like, sometimes, you know, just to give you an impression, you know, you walk through some of the rhododendrons, you know, that are up there for, I don't know how many years, you know, since ancient times, really. And so you walk through the rhododendron, and it's so quiet in there because it swallows up all the sound, you know, because it's so thick. And it almost gives you a claustrophobic feeling, you know. And you always have a feeling like something is watching you somewhere, you know. And you can really imagine, you know, how ghost stories can come about and spirit stories, you know, in environments like that. That you have these different, because, you know, 5 minutes, you know, just a few steps out of the rhododendron that it seemed very close and quiet and still. You walk out on a bald, and the wind is blowing, and you see the shadows of clouds rushing over the balds, and then there's a complete different spirit, you know, and that can change, right, in a matter of a few steps. And so these different pictures, you know, that they require different music, and it's like composing is a reversed process of the musical experience. So to clarify that, if you listen to music, you always see a picture. You know, people who listen to music, you know, just general audience, is not necessarily aware of what kind of picture they see. But it's like a dream. You see a picture, you are in a world, and if you like the world that you're in during the time you're listening to a piece of music, if you like that, if you like to be in that picture, well, you like the music. Because the music is just a sound, and it actually it just sort of creates in you an inner picture. Maybe somebody's listening to Bach and he doesn't like it because it makes him think of the teacher that he had and he punished him for every wrong note. Or then he listens to, you know, something like Doc Watson, and then you see somebody playing a guitar and you can remember the nice, the beautiful times you had at certain festivals, or, you know, you had an uncle who played, or, you know. And so if this picture you have in your mind is a sympathetic one, is a beautiful one, you know, that's the one, then you like the music. But like I said, most people are not really aware of what kind of pictures they see. As a musician, you train yourself to see what pictures you see. So you can defy, you know, why do you like something and why not? Sometimes you can even adjust the picture, you know, in order to change your likings of certain things. Or just, you know, be reestablished what you actually thought before it was true. You know, it's going to happen. But composing is a different process. I then try to create strong pictures I really like to stay with. And then I have the picture first, and then I create the music that doesn't disturb the picture, you know?
Okay.
But for that, I need all these different atmospheres that I think I really want to make a soundtrack to. And that's why, you know, and then I come up with this, with the different scenes, you know, for the music. And it's not in that, you know, strict classical sense. Do you know the term program music?
Program music. Not really.
No, that's a term in classical music when you, like, you know, you really reflect on something that's obvious, like you would make a thunderstorm or you make a train sound. You can really say, oh, that sounds like a horse, or that sounds like a train, that sounds like a thunderstorm. So that's what's called in classical music program music. So I'm trying not to do that. You know, like if there's a war scene, I'm not trying to shoot cannons and all that, you know?
Okay.
So what I do is really the atmosphere, capture the atmosphere musically, but not trying to represent it sound-wise, do you know? Not that there's always birds singing and, you know. And so I would actually just try to get the music that doesn't disturb the picture, you know. For instance, I can give you an example just so you understand me a little bit better.
Like, okay.
Like you would put a picture of your mother in front of you.
Okay.
Right? And you lay it on the table. And then let's say you would have some music of the Balkan, you know, running. You know, let's say from Hungary or from, you know, from somewhere. That music wouldn't probably fit that picture of your mother.
Okay,
you know?
Right.
Or then you maybe have some music, you know, from Russia, Siberia, or China. That wouldn't really fit either. Or maybe then some rap music. That wouldn't maybe fit it either, you know?
Right.
But then maybe there's a hymn, you know, from a church, you know, a sound of an organ or a harmonium and people singing, and all of a sudden you say, yeah, that sort of fits, right? That there's a connection there, you know?
Fits the picture, yeah.
You understand? It fits the picture. And so a composer does nothing else than actually trying to create a picture he can stay with and then make music that complements the picture. And so that's the composition process. So with Roan Mountain, there was such an abundance of great pictures that I really wanted to stay with that, you know, the composition assignment was for a half-hour concerto.
Okay.
So we ended up with 50 minutes of music, you know.
All right. It's a big mountain, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's so many atmospheres and scenes and significant feelings that, you know, I could define on in that place. There's such richness there that was really a great process for me. You know, it was a year's work, and it's, you know, of course, for string quartet, for the contras quartet, for Uwe Joel and me. And, you know, of course, it's really a classical piece, including three songs that we wrote about this, about the Roan Mountain. Wrote a song about the raven.
Oh, wow.
Song about a man who is actually sitting in the hotel, and he's a poet, and he's trying to write poetry in the hotel while in the night a band's playing in the hall. And and then it's a really good song, really, really happy about it. And then there's a song about a man who fought with the Overmountain Man, who is then actually old and looks back on his that time with the Overmountain Man. And so we wanted with these songs, you know, also to honor the heritage, you know, in words.
That's awesome.
And that's why, you know, first, you know, I talked to Judy, you know, I said, well, we should, you know, we have big concerts coming up in Raleigh in big concert halls. And I said, we should do the premiere there, you know, because it's a big thing, you know, a world premiere, you know. But first I said, we should do it there. And she said, no, we have to do it in Tennessee, you know.
We have to do
it in Tennessee. I said, well, good for you. Let's do it in Tennessee, you know. So there's only one world premiere.
Yeah.
You know, it's only once. Once you actually play it for the first time. And it's a very special night always, you know. So I've never
been to a world premiere.
Yes, I mean, and a lot of people have not. And I think it's just, it's a good feeling because, you know, for everybody, this is going to be the first time they're going to hear it, you know, for the first time in this world. And because it's a classical piece of music, you know, with, of course, you know, accessible, I have to say, though, but complex. You know, it's a real classical piece of music, and I think, and I'm telling you this not to brag, but I'm so excited about this because, you know, all my family and Uwe and Joel, they say that this is my best work that I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
So this is not just another composition. This is really, they say this is really as good as it gets from me so far, you know.
So you really have been inspired by the mountain then.
Yes, I have been, because I consider myself an alpine billy. and I have a lot of relation, you know, to the atmospheres of mountains.
That's great.
Yeah.
An alpine billy. Oh, that's fantastic. I wasn't aware there were alpine billies.
Well, they all left. They're here now, you know. You know, I think that the banjo,
yeah,
you know, the banjo, the instrument I play, is really representing the sound of this region as well.
Yes.
You know, I have one piece in there, it's called The Overmountain Men, of course, you know. And I also have pieces that are called Gad Around and Red Coat Rondo, you know. So I have all kinds of titles, but, you know, The Overmountain Men piece that I've written really is a development of old-time music into Baroque music, actually. It leads away from all-time mountain banjo music kind of into, and it develops backwards into Baroque music. It's a very exciting piece. It's really fun. It's really good. And so, you know, if you write about it, you know, you can share, you know, my enthusiasm, how great it is to have a world premiere of an actual classical piece in Bristol. You know,
okay.
I don't know how many world premieres you have in Bristol, you know, of that scope.
Well, not many at all. That's true.
You know, because it's that's why, you know, usually people do world premieres somewhere, you know, in more of a metropolitan, you know, sort of atmosphere.
Right.
Because it's the first time. It is really a significant time, you know, because we're going to be playing this and other people will be playing this, is because it's all scored out, you know. This is full score. There's no improvisation. This is all composed, you know.
And so everybody's practicing the same work.
Well, the contras already have my work, and they have all the scores. And Uwe and Joel and me have been practicing for the last month, you know, because it's very difficult and there's lots of notes. And so we have an entire week where we prepare for that premiere before we play it. So it's not like we get together and then play it. This is
right.
Because we have to relearn. In January, we will be recorded, and we plan on Merlefest on releasing the CD.
Oh, fantastic!
So we record in January, the contras are going to be playing with us, you know, at Merlefest as well. And then we're going to perform there. We also in January we're going to perform with, you know, in the Duke Energy Center in Raleigh, you know, 2,500 seater. So,
and you'll play some of this suite in these.
We're going to be playing, you know, Royal Mountain Suite, of course.
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome! That really is fantastic, Jens. I tell you, I just wish I can pass along this kind of enthusiasm. This is just going to be so fantastic.
Yeah, it's got to be great.
Well, Jens, I appreciate this time you've spent. This is way beyond what I'd even. And to even hope to hear. This is spectacular.
Well, I really appreciate you helping me, you know, with getting folks, you know, letting folks know what's going on, that it's not just another show, you know.
Okay. Yep. Look forward to it, Jens. Thank you so very, very much.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
What a fascinating time. I just really enjoyed talking with Jens, not only in his professional capacity, his ability to translate visions and feelings and history into music. I think that's just stunning how you can do that. But he's just a fun guy to talk to, a great sense of humor. I'm looking forward to meeting him at October 15th at the world premiere performance. As of this date, tickets are still available. You can get them online. Go to paramountbristol.org, or you can call 423-274-8920 to get tickets. What a fantastic opportunity, world premiere performance of such a monumental classical music performance. This is going to be available, like Yin said, in a lot of his performances for the next, gosh, years, I guess. Also, the recording and the CDs coming out at Merlefest next spring. What a great opportunity to be the first in the world to hear this. I'm really excited about that. I hope you are too. And many, many thanks to Judy Murray for picking the right person and the right concept, or the right person to carry out her concept. I really appreciate Judy coming up with this and making it all happen. Looking forward to it. Links, if you need more information, on the show notes for Rone Mountain Radio episode 69. Also, if you're on the email list, those will be sent to you. If you're not on the email list, go to ronemountainradio.com and sign up to get updates, links, and snippets of music, and more information on the Kruger Brothers will be coming out. Look forward to seeing you at the Bristol Paramount Theater on October the 15th. That's it for today. I'm Ken Turner. Thanks for listening, and if I don't see you at the Bristol premiere, I will see you on the mountain.